Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Friends to Infertility and Me podcast, a safe space created with the silent sufferer in mind. I Am Podcast is dedicated to infertility advocacy and sharing diverse stories to help you feel validated, seen, and heard. I am your host, Monique Farouk, and I am 1 in 82. Healing is best when done together. Hey friend, could you please do me the honor of leaving a 5-star rating and review in Apple iTunes? This will increase our show's ranking and reach more friends who may be silently suffering with infertility too. We're stronger together, staying connected, getting plugged in.
Thank you, Emily, for coming back on the show for a second time, and I appreciate you coming on the first time. A lot of people really enjoyed that episode on shame and how to deal with it, so that was a huge blessing for a lot of the listeners, so I appreciate you for coming back, and let's talk about some toxic positivity.
Girl, you know this will get me fired up.
Oh my gosh, like, where do we even begin, right? Like, it's so much we could say, so much toxic positivity. And, you know, when you're dealing with infertility and fertility issues, especially when we're talking about, like, dealing with people that we're close to, colleagues and family and friends, right? And everything, they don't even realize they're doing it, I don't think.
Yeah. So kind of like level set what toxic positivity is, I like to think of it as the socialization and cultural messaging that essentially tells us that no matter how dire or difficult a situation is, people should remain in a positive mindset. And the way I think about toxic positivity is it's actually like on two different fronts, right? So there's the toxic positivity that you get from other people, and then there's the toxic positivity that you kind of force feed yourself as well. And so I think it's important to like recognize that it's kind of an attack on both fronts if you think about it that way.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, I'm glad you broke down the definition of toxic positivity from a professional and mental health standpoint. And where do we even begin to try? And I guess we have to teach family and friends a little bit about why it's toxic.
I mean, I think there is certainly an element of education that we need to provide. And I'm all about education and awareness. What I am most concerned with is kind of on an individual level, recognizing, not because when we talk about like friends and family, that's pretty overt stuff, right? It's the, well, just be positive crap and all that. So that's much more in your face. But the thing that I always think about is like, what are the subliminal messages that we're receiving from culture, from social media is a huge contributing factor to this idea of toxic positivity, because social media plays such a huge role in our day-to-day lives that it almost just becomes part of our cultural speak, our vernacular, to incorporate things that influencers say. Now, influencers become influencers because they represent this idealistic view of the world that we kind of all have. And it's not really put through a filter of oh, this is a reasonable thing for most people, right? It's like, oh no, this is truly an aspirational thing for most people. And so, you know, where I spend a lot of my time thinking about toxic positivity is like dismantling that idea, that ideal, really, of what we get from social media. Because once we're able to like see it and see the crap that we just kind of regurgitate without thinking, I think that's a huge component. And, you know, I say this on my podcast all the time. We're not taught about negative emotions, right? And toxic positivity, I consider to be an avoidance technique. And what I mean by that is that when you yourself or someone around you will use toxic positivity, the good vibes only, or choose happiness, or whatever crap you're talking about, will use that as a way to avoid either feeling uncomfortable, you feeling uncomfortable as a person, you'll say like, oh, I just need to think positive thoughts or whatever. Or it's the person you're talking to who doesn't want to feel uncomfortable because of whatever you're talking about. And I think that's why it's so, such a huge thing in the infertility space, is because the things that we talk about, right, the things that we bring to light are incredibly uncomfortable for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I totally, totally, totally agree. And especially when we're talking about like the infertility online communities or fertility communities, you know, it almost becomes like this large rabbit hole of information. And sometimes, well, probably 50% of the time, we can't control what's on the timeline or our feed that we see when we're scrolling. And so, you know, there are things like muting certain pages or, you know, unfollowing people and stuff like that. But it's a lot. It's a lot to take on when you're dealing with infertility and loss and things like that. And trying to not censor, but control how you react and what information you are allowing yourself to take in.
Yeah. And I think that brings up such a good point, in that, like, in the infertility community, there's this unspoken rule that with no baby, you're sad and unhappy and things are bad.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And with a baby, you're happy and things are good. And so, and it's not, it's, again, it's very unconscious that we do this. And I don't think it's a problem, except that it becomes a little bit of a problem when people are kind of caught in that in between, right? And, yeah. And mm-hmm. This idea that this baby is going to be the thing that makes us happy. And so when we're kind of grappling with all of the grief and the loss and all of these things that come with infertility, it really, toxic positivity from either front, from someone else to you or you to yourself, it really limits your ability to actually experience the negative, the 50% of your life that is kind of inherently negative. Like, I do believe that life is 50-50. 50% of the time, it's going to be amazing and joy-filled and fun. And 50% of the time, it's going to hurt like hell. It's going to be uncomfortable. And there are things there that you're not going to want. But mm-hmm. That certainly goes away against like conventional wisdom, who are like, no, we should be happy all the time. Well, how's that working out for you guys? It's not working too well for me.
Hello, especially during COVID, like crazy.
Yeah. And so it again speaks to this idea that there is a way that life should be led, right? That there are things that you choose. Happiness is one of the sticky wickets that I get into. I'm sorry. I'm from Texas. You just saw that come through.
It's okay.
because it's a catch-22. Like, I believe that our thoughts create our feelings. So I do believe there is a way to, quote unquote, choose happiness. But in the way that it's kind of thrown out there, it's like this just cliche that's like, hey, I don't want to deal with the fact that you're unhappy. And so I'm just going to tell you that you can choose happiness and walk away after I drop that bomb. And then you're left to feel, usually it's shame, usually it's guilt, usually it's not enough. Like, I can't do these things that people say should come easy. And so that's the bigger problem with toxic positivity, is what it creates around you.
Yeah. And one thing you just said that made me think of is the word dismissive came up. And what I mean by that is the saying of choose happiness, or, you know, of course we all know that it is a choice to some extent. But it's also expected that you would be sad or depressed when you have a medical condition, right? And so, like you said, I think it's a very fine line in affirmations and or ways of thinking when you're dealing with a medical issue. Not saying that you're supposed to, you know, wallow in despair either at the same time, because it's unhealthy. All of it is really unhealthy. And it's a lot of dismissiveness, I don't know, in toxic positivity.
It is it's dismissive either way. You're either dismissing mm-hmm. your experience as a person, or you're dismissing someone else's experience as a person.
Yeah.
Right? There's no opportunity for us to be humans with one another, because people are just throwing out these platitudes without actually like genuinely allowing someone to have an emotion is probably one of the biggest, not to sound too dramatic, but one of the biggest plights of our interpersonal communication, right? So even if you just think of like your partner, how many times can you think of when your partner gets upset, you get upset? Right. Mm-hmm, instead of just mm-hmm. letting them have that, like they get to be upset. That they're moment. Their own person. Mm-hmm. And so that is really interwoven in this idea of toxic positivity, is that people don't get to have this discomfort. People don't get to experience pain and sadness when mm-hmm, that is, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. those are two of the most human experiences that we have. And again, that comes from both sides, like you not allowing yourself to experience those feelings, and then people just throwing out these, I kind of refer to them sometimes as throwaway terms, right? It doesn't yeah. mean anything. You're just kind of tossing some BS out, like, good vibes only. I mean, that statement in and of itself makes me want to kind of throat punch people. Because it doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't mean anything. And neither does the other one that we often use a lot as a term of like endearment or a statement of endearment that really doesn't mean anything and doesn't make anybody feel better, is I can't imagine.
Oh.
You know?
Mm-hmm. One of my clients, she's absolutely wonderful. So I want to say about 3 years ago, she lost her mother. And I don't know the specifics, but I think it was after an illness. And we were just talking about this the other day, so it's so funny that you said that. She said, you know, one thing that I can't stand is after my mom died, when people would say to me, I can't even imagine. Because it seems like a pretty statement, like you're empathizing. It seems like a compassionate statement. When really the person who's hurting is like, well, good for you. I'm so glad you can't even imagine, when this is my, you know, effing reality right now. And I think that that's so indicative of our culture, to not fully engage with the person you're actually talking to. Right. So, one of my clients, she is in Australia, and she loves it how when she works for a company that's based out of Houston, Texas. And she says, no matter what, every time I communicate with my coworkers, They always start the conversation with, how are you doing? But it's not like a request of genuine concern. Mm-hmm, it's just like a conversation starter. And nobody expects you to be like, well, actually, I'm feeling really depressed right now. And, you know, no one expects to answer that question in a genuine way. It's like, oh, good. How are you?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not specific enough. Like, how are you really doing? Like, are you emotionally okay? You know, do you have enough food in your house? You know, like, yeah, it's not specific at all. At all.
Right. Right. And it's, you know, it's just another example of kind of the disconnection of our communities. And I mean, that's just been ever evolving over the last 10, 15 years as technology and social media has just been such an enormous part of our daily lives, is that we have this beautifully polished and curated view of other people's lives, right? We're looking at the highlight reels, not the behind the scenes.
Yeah, definitely the filtered version.
Yes, yes. And the highlight reels doesn't tell you anything about the person. It just tells you that they can take a great picture from a great angle, or that, you know, this one thing that happened and they were able to overcome it. And, you know, I pride myself on being a very pragmatic and realistic person. Like, I don't expect my clients to come to me. I make sure that my clients know to not expect to come to me for absolute authority over what we're talking about. Like, I have to do a lot of the stuff that I tell my clients to do, but that's not the image that we get. And that's just so much of the reason that toxic positivity has just taken, like, it's almost like taken hold of our culture over the last, I don't know, like 5 years, and just with a vice grip, won't let go.
And I think it does have a lot to do with, you know, people trying to be more mindful about their mind health and their emotional health, and being in tune with themselves, and which is fine. But it also, you got to be really careful with yourself too, because even telling yourself these things is just as toxic as somebody making a comment or saying something, you know, that's not appropriate to someone dealing with infertility. It's all very, just very, delicate. And you really have to be careful that you aren't forcing yourself to be something that you're not and just going through the motions.
Absolutely. And, you know, I love that you brought that up, because, you know, I'm a mindset coach. So I focus my efforts on the conversation that you have with yourself in your head. Like, that's where I think the work of the world is overlooked, and how you can make your life better and more meaningful, and all these things, right? That's where I focus. And that's why I think toxic positivity is one of the most damaging things that we can do to ourselves, right? I am of the opinion that, and I know this isn't a shared opinion by everyone, and it's totally fine, but I am of the opinion that we can't make people do anything. So even if we tell someone, you know, when you tell me just to keep positive, I make that mean that I'm not doing enough to become a parent or whatever, right? So we can't control the stupid things that people say, the inappropriate things that people say, the nosy things that people say. But when we use it against ourselves, that is where so much of our pain comes from, right? Because if we're supposed to be positive and yet we are facing, let's say, a failed transfer, it's really hard to get to positivity when you are like staring down the barrel of your upcoming cycle, or you were just told by the nurse that your beta was negative. In fact, you could be Pollyanna and still not find a positive moment out of that. And that the understanding is that that's okay. That you don't have to find a silver lining. You don't have to force yourself to positivity. That it's okay to experience that sadness without layering on the, well, I should be grateful that we even got this opportunity, or I should be grateful that we even had something to transfer. Or anytime you use the word should is like a giant red flag that you're forcing yourself to think a certain way.
Yeah. Ooh, that's a good one. That's really good. Really, really good.
And, you know, as we kind of talk about the experience of humans, I think this idea that the pressure to feel and look okay, right? Quote unquote, okay. It really, if we're not feeling okay, if we're feeling sad, if we're feeling angry, if we're feeling any range of emotion outside of okay or good, it can kind of give us this impression that we are defective, right? There's something wrong with us. And, you know, I think for a lot of women, I know certainly the women that I've crossed paths with, there is this sense of inadequacy, like I'm not good enough, is probably a running narrative for most people, let alone most women. And so when we talk about, you know, toxic positivity, it really does feed that internal narrative, right? And it feeds this monster. I call it a couple of different things, but it kind of feeds the monster of the a-hole brain that you have that tells you all of these negative things. And so when you have a situation where your feelings and thoughts don't align with what you think should, with how you think you should think, or how you think you should feel, or how other people are telling you you should think, or how other people are telling you should feel, right? It's so much easier to place the blame on yourself that there's something wrong with you, as opposed to, oh, this is just something culturally we've done over the past 10 and 15 years and longer. And it's not actually, there's not actually anything wrong with me. I'm allowed to feel this way. And then it just makes other people uncomfortable.
You know, now that people are starting to get vaccinations, and I just always think about we're getting vaccinations and soon everybody will be, you know, will be in a place where it'll be safe to go. What I mean, even now, where it's safe to be in a home, a private space with people without masks, if everybody's been vaccinated fully, and you know, people who are vaccinated fully feel more comfortable going out into public and going into restaurant spaces and things like that. And so I just always think about how are we going to be better moving forward. What are we going to do that's different than before that's going to put us in a better position to communicate better, more effectively, and with more empathy, and also doing so for ourselves too?
Yeah, I mean, I love that you think in those terms, because that's very much this idea of like, how can we do better? And because of the type of work that I do, I always challenge my clients and people that I talk to, like, where is your level of responsibility? And I'm not, and that isn't to cast blame at all, but the knowledge and the understanding that we don't get to control the other humans. So what can you do to make yourself be better, do better, say better, think better? And I believe that genuinely always, always, always starts from a place of compassion for yourself. It is so much easier to be compassionate towards other people. I know sometimes in this climate, it doesn't seem like this because it seems like compassion is in pretty short supply for a lot of people. But it really is easier for us to be more compassionate towards other people and to show empathy towards other people. But grace and compassion is an even shorter supply for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we talk about, if we talk about toxic positivity in conversations with people, you know, I'm a little bit more of a defiant personality. That's just, it's just part of what makes me. And so when I was going through primary infertility and I was hearing all that, right, I think I posted the other day on someone was asking like, what's the worst thing you ever heard? And it was my mother-in-law's friend had asked my husband if he was going to do his manly duty and get me pregnant.
Wow.
And I remember very distinctly, it was my husband and I standing next to her while she asked us. And I remember very distinctly, like, I deserve better for myself than to engage in this type of conversation.
Mm.
And that in that moment, I didn't realize it at the time, was that I was showing myself compassion rather than either smiling and giggling awkwardly at the question, which I have done also. Like, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Sometimes that's just a natural reaction.
Right, yeah. Right. Oh, I'm uncomfortable. That's funny. That's a funny way to say that. Or just getting outright angry, which I have also done. Believe me, when I say that I cover all the bases, I really do. But most importantly for me, like, I realized I owed it to myself to not let her words upset me. And I think that that's, if we're able to accept responsibility for what our role is, and in those situations, our role is, what do we owe it to ourselves to do? What can I do to safeguard myself? Now, is that smiling and laughing awkwardly so you can rush out of the restaurant? That's totally fine. Is that getting angry and belligerent? That's totally fine too. But it's just a question of, how do you want to show up in the world? Because the more that you show up as you, the better off this world's going to be regardless.
Yep. And I think that's the key, that if we learn how we react to the negativity of the world, or, you know, in our immediate lives and stuff, if we can control how we react to those things, then I definitely feel like it does make it easier. Because I always feel like, especially having been in this thing, this infertility thing, for 8 years, right? I'm like, okay, look, I know that people are going to say certain things. I know that people are ignorant to infertility in many, many ways, and what it really is, what it means as a medical diagnosis, and the seriousness of it, right? And so if I can come into a situation where people are going to say things that are going to rub me the wrong way, even in the thick of this thing, I think the hardest part that we learn in the midst of infertility is knowing what to expect. Knowing that I already am going to expect these things from people. And then, so how can I control how I react to what it is that they're saying, and not expecting them to know how to deal with me when they've never experienced what I've experienced?
Quite literally the only thing that we have control over. And I think it was Maya Angelou. I can't remember I would butcher the exact quote. But it's basically you show people how they can treat you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I, like, she said it much more, much, much more eloquently than I can. Obviously,
girl, any of us. Angelou. Okay. Any of us.
But I think I 100% agree with you. Like, if the only thing that we can control is our behavior, our reaction, the words that we say, the things that we do, then what do we owe to ourselves? So I'm trying to remember. There was a client that I had. She had she was just finishing up one transfer that had failed. She had one on ice, and she was telling this friend that she'd gone to school with that she was nervous to transfer that last embryo, right? It was kind of like her last vestige of hope. Not literally, because she knew she could do other ones, but in her mind, that's what she'd kind of created around this embryo.
Narrative. Yeah, yeah.
Right. And her friend was like, are you crazy? Why wouldn't you do that? Like, that would be the first thing I would do. Like, you got to be positive about this. You got to know that it's going to work. And what is so often the case is that people who've never experienced it, and even a lot of us who have, because we're humans, will say things from their point of reference. And I think that's, again, mm-hmm. that's a very normal mm-hmm. thing, but for my friend's friend or my client's friend, her point of reference was she wasn't married. She wasn't interested in having kids at all. So her point of reference wasn't filtered through a lens of grief and sadness and loss like my client's was. Her point of reference was from a very different, for lack of a better word, a cleaner place, right? Mm. But because that was her point of reference and she didn't have my client's reference point, she just said what she believed to be true for herself. And that is so much of how toxic positivity plays into just ordinary conversations outside of like these buzz slogans and buzzwords that we use. That's like the insidious nature of toxic positivity is that people use themselves as a reference point for how other people should live their lives.
Yes. Yes, that is so like powerful. And to move into, I guess, a more empowering note to end the conversation today, where can we begin? We've already said that we can begin first with acknowledging our feelings, you said at the beginning. And then the second point you brought up was controlling how we react to situations and not having an expectation that isn't conducive for the situation, because most of the time we know that they're not going to know how to deal with you or the situation that you're going through, medically speaking, with infertility and loss. And so what's a third point of reference we can focus on in order to go back out into the world, you know, slowly going back out into the world after COVID? And how can we... because you touched on it a little bit, but how can we further teach others what it is that we need from them?
Mm-hmm. So I'll share that one. And then I want to touch on a couple of points for individuals as they okay. navigate it. So when we talk about like educating or creating awareness or anything like that for other people, I am a big believer in boundaries, but I think that most people don't really know how to set a boundary. Mm-hmm. Like, for me, boundaries are if you, then I, right? That's how that is traditionally and academically how boundaries are kind of described. If you do this, then I will do this, right? Because it presupposes that the person has authority and agency over what they say and do. So an example would be like, if I'm not a smoker, you are. If you smoke in the car, which you're allowed to, right? You're a human being, you're an adult, you're allowed to smoke. If you smoke in the car, then I will leave the car and we'll drive separately, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. That's a boundary. So in conversations, number one, you have to decide, first of all, if a boundary is even worth it. Because sometimes boundaries aren't worth it. Like if you're just dealing with a nosy Karen who you're never going to see again, then like walk away. You don't owe that person anything. You owe it to yourself to not be upset and to not let it ruminate. Because people throw out toxic positivity statements and then they move on with their lives. That's what kills me. Mm-hmm. These people just
stuck.
Right. They're just throwing this crap out and then they move on with their lives. And then we sit and stew and ruminate for days and weeks and months. And we get so angry and they have never given it another thought. And so what is more important, to let this person have continued power over you or to walk away and be like, you know what? That is much more an example of their problem than mine. Right? They are not interested or willing to experience a genuine human connection. So that says a lot about them. Totally fine. Now, if it's someone who is closer to you and you are much more interested and invested in creating that relationship, then I think a boundary is very reasonable. Moms, sisters, cousins, you know, family members are very, very common. How do I want to say it? They do it a lot, right? I was trying to think of a better word, but they're the ones that throw out a lot of statements because they don't want us to feel bad, right? Our family loves us, friends love us, they want us to feel better. So it's very much a question of like, if you're in a conversation with your mom and your mom's like, well, maybe you should just look into adoption. Adoption is a lot of great options, right? Then it's like, you know what, mom? When you say that, that's fine. You can tell me to adopt. But when you say that, I'm going to end the conversation. That's not what I'm interested in. And if it's possible, we can talk about other things. But when you mention that, I'm going to change the conversation or walk away. Like, that's just what I need, because I don't want to be reminded that adoption is an option, even though I've told you adoption is beautiful, but it's not for us. Right? So it's setting up a clear expectation for what you're willing to engage in and what you're not. And just recognizing that either one of those things is okay. What you're willing to engage in and what's not, right? I think that's probably when you talk about dealing with other people, giving yourself permission to clearly outline what it is you're willing to tolerate and what it is you're willing to, and what you're not willing to tolerate.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I love that. And I don't think that we should feel timid about helping people learn how to learn us, you know, especially right. when you're going through infertility and loss. So I love that. I love that. And if there's anything else you'd like to say, Emily, to our friends that are listening, I'll give you the floor.
Yeah. For those of you who are using toxic positivity against yourself, I've got three things. Feel your feelings. Sit with it. Sit with it, sit with it. It's going to feel terrible, but I guarantee you it's going to feel less terrible than when you're telling yourself you should feel a different way than you actually feel. So allowing yourself the opportunity to feel what it is you're genuinely feeling without trying to force it away. Another thing is, remember that feelings are not mutually exclusive. Our brain thinks of things in terms of black and white, yes and no, right and wrong, right? But that is not how we experience life. Life is not black and white like that. And so healthy positivity actually acknowledges the authentic human experience. It rejects the all or nothing premise of our brain, right? It holds that there can be two things that occur simultaneously. So when I was going through, when we had our failed transfer, I allowed myself to feel sadness over the failed transfer while feeling gratitude about the children that I do have. And I didn't need to guilt or shame myself because I wasn't feeling gratitude or that I was feeling sadness, right? So both ways. And then in some ways, especially when you're going through infertility and IVF, I think that we get into trouble when we don't plan for there to be pain. I think we have a very, I think human nature gives us these like lofty expectations for how we're going to feel and how we should feel.
Mm-hmm.
And so when something happens that flies directly in the face of that, that is kind of when we turn that toxic positivity against ourselves. And so just being open to the possibility of like, this, I could be in pain. This might not work. I don't have to force myself to believe it's going to work at no cost, like unadulterated. It's going to work. It's going to work. It's going to work. I'm open to the possibility of both happening. And so if it doesn't work, it doesn't mean you didn't want it enough. But you're having a very realistic expectation for the natural course of infertility and fertility treatments. There are times that it doesn't work. And preparing yourself for that option rather than just trying to like pile drive positivity throughout the process really gives you some space to be human. And that's all we really want. I just want you guys to be human, that it's okay to be human.
Wonderful. Love that, Emily. Thank you so much for giving us your time again today and for continuously supporting us and just being you, because I think that everything you said here is really good moving forward with summertime and springtime and larger gatherings and getting vaccinations and feeling comfortable going back outside to, you know, mingle and socialize with one another, family, friends, and whoever else, and maybe going back into workspaces too. So I think that everything you've stated here has just been pure gold. So I appreciate you so, so very much again for giving us your time. And then let us know how we can connect with you online.
Well, first of all, Monique, it is always a delight to talk to you. I love your stuff. That's why I keep asking you if I can come on, because I love talking to you. for me, you can find me at, my website is www.ivfthiscoaching.com. I'm very active on Instagram. My handle is at ivfthiscoaching. And Clubhouse is also a new platform that I have been expanding into. And I have a Monday open coaching call on Clubhouse at 1:15 Central Standard Time. So you can come in, and I usually teach on a topic for the first 10 or 15 minutes, and then I open the floor to any question. It doesn't have to pertain to that topic specifically, but if there's anything that you're working through that you want some coaching on or some guidance, I'm there, and there's usually at least one other coach and a couple of peer facilitators as well. And then if you like the type of messaging that I have, my podcast is called IVF This, and every week I break down a coaching concept as it relates to infertility and IVF. I think one of the most important things that I do in my work is helping to normalize what your brain does and why. Because I think for a lot of us, when our brain goes haywire and it starts throwing out these terrible, I'm a failure, I'm a loser, I'm worthless, things like that, and we don't understand why, like evolutionarily and the social programming that we have, I think that that's why we get caught in this spin cycle and we just feel like we can't get out. Like we're feeling miserable so much. And so that is kind of what I pride myself on, is my ability to help people understand what their brain is doing and why. So that's, if you want to follow me, Instagram is my main platform. Join me on Clubhouse and then check out my podcast.
I'm going to have all of Emily's information in the show notes for you guys to tap and go and make it very simple and easy for you to connect with her further. Thank you again, Emily, so very much, my dear. And I'm always here. If you got to say something to the people, I'm here for you. We can do it again, girl.
I love it.
And we're here for you guys. And we thank you so much for giving us your time and your ear in listening to today's episode on Infertility and Me podcast. Peace and
blessings. If you enjoyed today's episode, friend, take a screenshot and let me know on Instagram and tag Infertility and Me podcast. You can also reach me at infertilityandmepodcast.com with your questions, comments, and feedback.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.